not afraid. I am a hurricane, listen to yourself. Turn world to the dumb needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Beat it up and not speed front. No strings, none matter. Such a clatter with fear. Fight down high. Wire in a fire. Representing 7 games in the government for hire. In a combat site. Metal weapons coming in a hurry with the fury speeding down your death.
From New York City, the survival capital of the world, this is Radio Doomsday Live. And I'm your host, Mike Luckman. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about Planet X, relationship possibly to the Second Coming. And we'll also be talking about an asteroid that's going to be coming dangerously close to Earth and coming at us very soon on February 15th or 16th. No one is saying from NASA or anyone in any official capacity that there's any real danger that Earth could be struck. But this is an asteroid that's about 200 foot across, and if it did strike, it has enough power to do the kind of devastation that happened in 1908 in an area called Tunguska in Siberia, where 830 square miles were leveled. So it could easily, I mean, New York City, for example, is 15 miles long. That'll give you some idea of the kind of destruction that could occur. Not just one of the things we're going to be talking about tonight, that's in the category pretty much of breaking news. The asteroid, incidentally, is DA, known as DA 14th, and the dates again are February 15th to 16th. There have been many more asteroids that have been coming toward Earth recently, and more that are forecast to come toward Earth. What's concerning about this one is that it's going to actually come lower, or I should say closer to Earth, than the satellites. So it could be a close call. And in a worst-case scenario, we wouldn't want to hear about a worst-case scenario. And the thing about Planet X is that it's known that Planet X hurls asteroids toward Earth. That's one of the signs that Planet X is approaching, and that seems to be happening right now. I want to tell you about a contact that I have with a very interesting guy, a professor emeritus at the University of Belfast. His name is Mike Bailey, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. And he's discovered that according to ice core samples, and he's a very distinguished professor, incidentally, who specializes in all kinds of things that are important. These ice core samples indicate that that Mayan calendar endings correspond or appear to correspond. He emphasizes that these are his preliminary findings, but they appear to coincide with comet strikes. And here we have this asteroid coming dangerously close. I mean, you add it all up together. Now, there's something else that's a great concern to me, and something that I more or less stumbled upon very recently and got me very, very upset and concerned. And that has to do with the mysterious deaths of some 24 well-known astronomers in different parts of the world in recent years. And what these astronomers all had in common was that they were tracking near-Earth objects, such as comets, such as asteroids. And they have died untimely and mysterious deaths. I don't mean particularly individuals who have come down with some kind of disease, and it could be argued either way whether they had the disease all along, but I'm talking of people who have died under very mysterious circumstances in car crashes and train crashes. And what's most disturbing is that some of them have died in pairs. Some of these astronomers work together in pairs on various projects, and they had died in pairs. Eugene Shoemaker, the Shoemaker-Levy comet, died. Allegedly, he was drunk in a car accident. Now, I don't know what history he had as far as whether he drank or he didn't drink ever, but I got to tell you, that's a great concern. I mean, the next day after his untimely death, his laboratory mysteriously burned to the ground. Now, this, of course, is very analogous. It recalls the aftermath of the Kennedy assassination with Dorothy Kilgallen, the columnist, and other individuals who were witnesses or who had certain information in the wake of the Kennedy, John F. Kennedy assassination. Also died mysterious deaths, and also in the 1980s over in England, about a similar number, maybe about 24 or so, 20, at least 20, scientists who were working on Star Wars projects involving technology for the American government all died mysterious deaths. So the question is, are these things related not to Kennedy's assassination with the Star Wars or with the asteroid, the Planet X, or what have you, but they just seem to be the same kind of thing happening, history sort of repeating itself. In this instance, we're talking about asteroids, comets, Planet X, whatever, take your pick, coming toward Earth. My guest, let me get to my guest right now before we go any further. My guest is a travel writer, author, and publisher, Doug Elwell. He's written a book called Planet X, The Sign of the Son of Man and the End of the Age. Welcome, Doug, to the show.
Hey, great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Doug, I wanted to first begin with your, I know that you studied religion, history, mythology, and those kinds of disciplines. I wanted to see how you connect Planet X, and I don't have to be sold on the existence of Planet X. I worked with a little bit, and I certainly knew Zechariah Sitchin, and also I worked on several news conferences with Tom Van Friend and the former astronomer for the U.S. Naval Observatory, who actually set Robert Harrington, who was then the head of the observatory, into action looking for Planet X based on Tom's information. And, of course, we all know that Harrington found the signs of Planet X, and that started the public knowledge about Planet X. But how do you connect these, how do you connect Planet X things as central as the creation of Earth and the nativity and the end times, which I believe is exactly what we're experiencing right now?
Yes. Well, I started off with Sitchin's writings. I studied him. I was actually looking back in the 80s. I was looking for signs of Jesus' return because people were saying this is near the end times, and I was wondering if this was indeed true, what would be the sign of his second mm-hmm. coming? And in Matthew 24, Jesus actually gives a very detailed layout of the second coming, kind of point for point as a pretty pithy overview. And as at the peak of this description in Matthew 24:30, he describes how a sign, mysterious sign, will appear in the heavens, which will presage his second coming. So I figured, maybe this is something like the Star of Bethlehem event, which presages his first coming. So as part of my research, I thought maybe there's a couple of different things it could be. It could be maybe a comet or a conjunction of planets, a supernova. Those are usually the top three things that identified as being the Star of Bethlehem. And then after a while, those didn't really fit the criteria. My assumption was that the Star of Bethlehem and the sign of the Son of Man were actually the same object, so I proceeded with that assumption. And based on my research, I wasn't able to find anything that really fulfilled the criteria. Something that could come twice. There's something that could come close to Earth and cause cataclysm and so forth. Until mm-hmm. I found Zechariah Sitchin's book, The 12th Planet, and I realized this answers all the questions I have about not only the Star of Bethlehem, but also the Second Coming and also the creation. Because Sitchin goes into great detail about, and really the core of the book, The 12th Planet, is about how Enuma Elish, the Babylonian version of the creation epic, talked about how, in the beginning, a heavenly object, which they refer to as Marduk, which is basically a planet in the sky, came into conflict with the Earth, which was identified symbolically as a dragon named Tiamat. And he also pointed out how there were clear cognates with the Bible. And after that, I was pretty much hooked. It was smooth sailing afterwards, and everything just kind of fell into place.
Okay. The third secret of Fatima, in the research that I've done, it seems that the third secret very much involves Planet X, or at least some large body from space, perhaps a comet or Planet X, coming toward Earth and causing flooding of biblical proportions. Do you know anything about the third secret of Fatima? I mean, have you done any research into it yourself? And if so, what have you found?
No, it's pretty well hidden. I basically did assume that it has something to do with Planet X, because only something that important would require such high-level secrecy. That plus you can watch the actions of the Vatican in the creation of their own telescope, searching the heavens for something. And you put two and two together. You put two and two together.
Mount Adams telescope, Doug?
I'm not sure of the name, but I do know they have their own telescope. Maybe it's in your
The Mount Adams one that they have Arizona.
Probably Arizona, because that's very good for viewing, because the air is very clear down there. And my opinion, the third secret, even though I don't really know, probably has something to do with the second coming and specifically Planet X. So I would tend to agree with you on that, even though we won't know until they reveal it.
Doug, there was a very interesting UFO event that happened, maybe about 8 months ago, it seems, where a UFO came down over the city of Jerusalem adjacent to the Temple Mount and was filmed from at least four different directions, like cameras, including, by the way, a camera that takes pictures every 10 seconds. It's a weather camera that's stationed over Jerusalem. And so the image repeats from different angles, and it's definitely, an object or a light, at least, large, bright, coming down toward the horizon, and then suddenly it's zipping back up very fast at lightning speed, and a bunch of maybe as many as a dozen or so red lights, almost like a 4th of July thing, shooting up, and then, of course, all disappearing. But this happened right adjacent to the Temple Mount, and I'm wondering whether you could see that as a possible sign of a second coming. Do you equate it in that way?
I tend not to get involved with UFOs because I don't really know much about them. Plus, they tend to be hoax.
Okay, all right. But do you know the event I'm talking about?
Yes, there was a sudden beam of light that went up from the Temple Mount. It's kind of shocking.
Yeah. I was on Fox and Friends discussing it, and it. It's gotten an awful lot of attention, but we won't say on UFOs right now because we've got a lot of other things to talk about. What do you think is in your research? What do you think is the most important finding that you've made as far as a correlation with Planet X?
You mean in terms of modern proof for its existence? Or the proof of the existence of Planet X, most of my actual proof for that comes right out of the astronomical textbooks and articles. There's all kinds of research that's been done on Planet X ever since the late 1800s. And it used to be that it was believed that the planet Neptune had some variations in its orbit, which indicated a magnetic pull or gravitational pull of another object farther out in the solar system, which is why scientists originally looked for Planet X. That was since disproven as observational anomalies. But when the Voyager probes went out past the planets Uranus and Neptune, they realized that they found a disaster area. Both the planets had very significant erratic attributes to them there. Uranus, for example, was literally tilted on its side as if it had been bowled over by a gigantic bowling ball. Neptune had a very significant, very odd things going on with it, too. For example, its rotational and magnetic axes were almost perpendicular to each other, forming sort of an X, ironically. And also, the moons of planet Neptune indicate interference by a very large object, roughly five times the mass of Earth, as calculated by mainstream scientists, not people on the internet. So most of my actual research is based on real science. I don't get involved in the speculation. I just base it on what the scientists and astronomers tell me and take them at their word. So we don't need to get involved in this 2012 type speculation or however you want to characterize it. It's all right there in the science textbooks. All you have to do is believe it.
Yeah. Except I got to tell you, you know, like these scientists can't all be trusted, and NASA certainly can't be trusted. For one thing, I've been involved with the in a very essential way in the UFO cover-up. But putting the UFO thing aside, this guy David Morrison, who's the head of the Carl Sagan Institute, and he's an astrobiologist. And he's the guy who did this so-called this so-called 2012 hoax video that he put out, where point by point he sought to demolish all of these concerns that people had about the so-called end of the world on December 21st, 2012. And incidentally, I've never, ever, ever suggested that anything of physical nature would happen on that date. Back from the very beginning when we started this show about 6 or 8 months ago, I've been saying on every single show that nothing's going to happen with physical nature on that date. Although there's always something, some part of the world where some minor earthquake or something, but basically very little or nothing would happen on that date. And of course, I was right. It's no big deal. Morrison went on a show on Current TV, which is until recently owned by Al Gore. Current TV is a cable operation, and it was just sold. And he made an outrageous statement. He said that without any backing whatsoever, he said that 25 million Americans were stockpiling guns and machetes to prepare December 21st. I think I know where he got the 25 million figure from. He probably got that from the Reuters poll that a large number of Americans did believe that it would actually be the end of the world on December 21st, which is unbelievable that people would think that way, but a lot of them did. Nonetheless, though, and I invited Morrison to come on my show, and of course he turned me down, but I've been in touch with some of the key Mayan elders both in Mexico and in Guatemala. And, of course, they've always said from the very beginning that they were disturbed that their calendar and their culture was being misrepresented as far as this doomsday scenario. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, they have told me, they have confided to me, and they have said that they believe that there will be very catastrophic things occurring in this general time period, which seem based on what they say and what the Hopi Indians also say, that it's going to continue at least another couple of years. And they do believe in, Mayans believe in Planet X coming around every 3,600 years. They also believe in a pole shift, which the Hopi very much believe in. And they're very concerned, of course, as a lot of people are even asked about the solar storms in the sun. But to get back to Planet X, and incidentally, the Russian scientists have taken Planet X very, very seriously. Marina Popovich, who was the most famous woman pilot in Russia, and her husband, former husband, Popol Popovich, who was a well-known cosmonaut in Russia, they both feel very strongly that Planet X is coming, and that it's fairly imminent.
What do they base that evidence on?
Like none of us do. What?
What is the basis of their belief? Have they seen evidence of it, or just?
They're not shared out with me. I don't know exactly what the basis is, but I do know that they take it quite seriously. And I would assume that a man in Popovich's position would have access to sensitive information, etc. So that's I don't know the exact nature of that, of course, but in any event, Doug, I wanted to let's just stop there for a moment. Let me ask you before we get back to Planet X. We've been talking a lot about Planet X, and we'll continue. But I wanted to ask you about some of your other travels and research as far as other mysterious places in the world. And what are some of the more intriguing spots that you know about that you could tell us about that people may not be so familiar with?
Okay. A lot of my writing has to do with North American archaeology. I've done a lot of visiting to Aztlan, Cahokia, a lot of sort of unusual, not only out-of-the-way places that can be locally visited and are inexpensive to visit. You don't have to go to Egypt to see pyramids, for example. There's one near St. Louis. Other things I've written about are sea monsters, Nessie, Ogopogo, Champ, and literally dozens of others all around the world, most of which seem to be congregating around the northern latitudes. But the biggest one's probably the Articles of the Giants, which are been very, very popular, and I'm actually writing a book currently, a revised expand version of my book on the Giants, talking about their origins and the fallen angels and the fall of Satan, and it gets really actually quite involved, where it has a comprehensive angelology and demonology and how things all came to be and why the Giants were created. It's part of...
I was just going to ask, do you believe in Atlantis at all?
Yeah, I actually wrote a series of articles on Atlantis as well. It's a very interesting subject. I like to study about old things. Older is better, in my opinion. I always like to look to the basics to find out how things started, so that way you can kind of get an idea of, you know, like you start at the beginning of your book so you know what happened, and then you move forward, you get a much better idea of why things are the way they are. And Atlantis appears to be an important part of the ancient world, and also of America, because the founders of America, at least some of them, thought of America as sort of a new Atlantis, and they were trying to recreate Atlantis by creating America, creating kind of the ideal version of Plato's Atlantis, and the democratic ideals and sort of the everything that goes with it. So, and also Atlantis is a popular tourist kind of theme. There's even a major resort called the Atlantis Resort in the Bahamas. And my travel angles typically involve ancient mysterious places to visit, because those are not only interesting, but they're also popular.
You wrote a book about specifically about Ireland. Tell us about that.
My book, A Mysterious World Ireland, has to do with... It's the first in a series of travel guides called Mysterious World Travel Guides. Mm-hmm. And the book has to do with, it's basically two parts. It is a combination travel guide. The first part is actually a complete overview of Irish history and mythology, religion, culture, and everything. And the second part is the larger part of the travel log of one man's journey across Ireland to kind of try to find ancient Ireland. And it turned out to be very massive. It's such an interesting history to Ireland that I couldn't stop myself. I ended up making a gigantic book out of it. It was 776 pages. And if you wanted to know anything about Ireland, history, culture, religion, a very comprehensive travelogue of the entire island, all the counties and even some very out-of-the-way places, this mysterious one island is definitely something you want to look at.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get back to World Planet XL. Some of the more important revelations are that you make in that book, presumably for the first time?
I would say the most important revelations are the fact that it appears to be kind of the center of the Bible. It's not just something that's somewhat important. It's actually of central importance to the Bible. The Bible seems to be the story of the creation as regards Planet X and how everything started with Planet X, and it's really quite central. I was quite impressed about how often it did show up and how important it really was. That the creation, it seems to be all about Planet X and this conflict between God and the dragon and heavens, just like the Babylonian creation epic. And you find the references to the God-dragon combat scattered throughout the Psalms and Isaiah, and particularly Job, which actually appears to be more of a Hebrew version of the Babylonian creation epic. It's not just epic poetry.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a creation epic in and of itself, which is written from the Hebrew perspective. It's, that is to say, non-mythological, more of a kind of a monotheistic approach to the same material. In other words, they couldn't use references to deities battling in heaven because they only had one god. So they turned it into a... They took the same source material and turned it into kind of a monologue.
What have you found about the... do you talk about the Anunnaki, the beings that supposedly live on Nibiru, Planet X? And were they, in your opinion, in fact... Giants, at least compared to humans, quite tall, and of course highly advanced. What do you know about the Anunnaki?
The Anunnaki are the same beings referred to as the Nephilim in the Bible, actually the fallen angels. The Anunnaki are the fallen angels, the beings that came down from heaven to earth, interbred with human women, both in the Sumerian mythology and also in the biblical. They go by different names, but they're... The names mean the same thing, those who came from heaven, you know, came down. Anunnaki literally means those who came down from heaven to earth. And the same story of intermarrying with women and all the rest, there's no significant difference between the two. And they both fostered giants, demigods, men of renown, such as Gilgamesh and many others, actually. Those are the major ones. But
how long, Doug, did, in your opinion, from what you've read, researched, How many years might some of these Anunnaki live here on the Earth? Because presumably they were able to, they had secrets of not immortality, at least life extension that went way beyond anything we could imagine.
It says in the Book of Enoch that the Watchers and their children sought to steal the power of God and use it to live at least 500 years. Even though the patriarchs of the Bible actually managed to live 1,000 years. I suspect that has something to do with actually monatomic gold and or the use of one or more other technologies that we're only now just discovering. In my book, I have another book, a Kindle e-book called The Riddle of the Sphinx, where I posit that an ancient piece of technology is actually hidden underneath the Sphinx. And this technology, among other things, allows for increased lifespan. It's the same device which shows up in many different places in the Bible. It shows up in the Garden of Eden as the Tree of Knowledge. It shows up as the Mark of Cain. His Mark of Cain was actually, I believe, a crown which he wore on his head, which gave him knowledge and defended him from his enemies and that sort of thing. So the ancient world and the way things used to be was actually basically based on high technology that was given mankind by fallen angels. And my book on the Riddle of the Sphinx talks about that in depth, and also the book on the giants will talk about similar subjects, where the Anunnaki and Nephilim basically came down to Earth. The Bible refers to them as actually the Nephilim with the giants, but the fallen angels are the same as the Anunnaki, and they both came down to Earth, interbreed with the women and the women that God created to create very informative humans, what we refer to today as giants. These giants. We're meant to...
Do you think that they were down here essentially to use humans to create human offspring to mine gold to line their atmosphere?
I don't know about that. That's a Sishonite approach. I really have no idea. It's completely original. I've never heard of that in any other ancient documents of the Bible or Book of Enoch or anything else. So. It may be, I really don't know, because I have never read it outside of Sitchin's writings.
Okay. All right, incidentally, how do people get a hold of you? Give the title of your book again, and how do people get a hold of you?
The title of the book is Planet X, the Sign of the Son of Man and the End of the Age. It's available at SurvivorMall.com, or you can also get it on Amazon.com. The Riddle of the Sphinx is an Kindle e-book available on Amazon.com. Also, Mysterious World Ireland, available through Amazon.com. You can also visit ireland.mysteriousworld.com to learn more about that and download free PDFs, samples, and things like that.
Now, Doug, you also wrote a book about the Sphinx. What do you know about the Sphinx? So what can you tell us about the so-called hidden library, supposedly beneath the paws of the Sphinx, which Edgar Casey, was known as Sleeping Prophet, said would be discovered. Do you really think it's there? And what can you tell us about it?
The Hall of Records, the major source for that in recent days has been Edgar Casey, even though I believe it was known of by the ancients. The story is that basically the Atlanteans or some other ancient race, ancient Egyptians, whoever, buried, right before the flood, buried a storage of ancient records from the world before the flood and all the knowledge they had accumulated, and put it in such a format that it would last forever and be retrievable by future generations. It is believed by Edgar Casey and others that this was buried underneath the Sphinx. And the Sphinx is part of an elaborate kind of three-dimensional puzzle of which the pyramids and Sphinx comprise, which shows those who have knowledge and understanding of such things where the Sphinx is, where the Hall of Records is buried and how it's buried, and really basically what it is. And so the Hall of Records should be considered basically some sort of repository of all knowledge, not unlike the tree of knowledge mentioned in the book of Genesis, the Garden of Eden. Something that contains all knowledge, including forbidden knowledge, which, if used in the wrong hands, could lead to great destruction, even the destruction of mankind. So for this reason, it has been kept from us. And my theory is that knowledge, that tree of knowledge, that object, which I believe is basically a gigantic sapphire stone, into which all knowledge was written, is buried underneath the Sphinx. And those who try to find this thing, it's heavily guarded by probably secret societies. It is meant to only the one who owns it, one man at the end of time, apparently the Antichrist.
Yeah, you know, Jane Dougherty, who's been my guest on Radio Doomsday Live several times now, is a psychic, a very good one. She lives in New Jersey. And she was on a program called the TLC, the Learning Channel, put out called Dead Tenants. And she is going to conduct a tour of the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid and that whole area. And she's getting unprecedented access. I'm not saying that she's going to be able to get in town below where the paws are, but she certainly has a very good sense of things. And she is going to be getting access to certain things where most people do not have access to. It's very interesting that there was a chamber that was not so long ago photographed where they were able to, I guess, drill holes and then put a camera in there in some way. And what they found basically it seemed that it was an empty chamber per se, but nonetheless they did find markings either on the wall or on the floor the minute I saw these, because they were in color, they were kind of in a reddish purple, I recognized them as being very similar, believe it or not, to the symbols that were found on at the Roswell crash site. I have a drawing that was done for me by Jesse Marcel Jr., whose father was in charge of the roundup for the Roswell Army Air Force at that time, and who brought home to Jesse one of these pieces that had the hieroglyphs on it. And now, they're very similar kind of flower petal type markings in his same color, basically, very close, shows up in the Great Pyramid in the chamber that's been sealed all of these years. What would you make out of something like that?
Well, it would indicate probably they were both built by the same race. I've never heard of that, so that sounds very interesting. Correlation between the fallen angels and aliens has been pretty close. I mean, I personally think they're the same thing because they They do the same thing. They behave the same way. They intermarry with human women and create hybrid offspring, just like the Nephilim and the Anunnaki are described to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it would make sense that technology
and the teaching would have. That we can look forward to an open landing by the Anunnaki anytime soon in our lifetime, whatever that might be?
Probably. I imagine immediately preceding the Second Coming, we'll have an invasion of the Anunnaki who will come down. I suspect there'll be a battle in heaven which they will lose. And as a result, they're forced to come down from heaven to earth and kind of take refuge here. And like the losers in any battle, they'll probably kind of bully the local inhabitants and force them to take their mark, if you will, to take their rulership, otherwise they'll be killed. And then right on their heels will be coming the winning battle fleet, which will have defeated them. And that is what is referred to in the Bible as the Second Coming of Christ.
What do you think our position should be, humanity's position should be? I had I don't know if you know him or not, Neil Freer on the show not so long ago. He's a friend of Zechariah Sitchin's, and he's written a book called Breaking the God Spell, which essentially spells out what humanity's position should be toward the Anunnaki, given their apparent history with us, namely that even though they jump-started the human race, if you believe in Sitchin, which I do, and combining their DNA with the DNA of pre-humans, forming people like us, essentially. But they employed these individuals to be slaves to mine for gold. What should our position be toward the Anunnaki, assuming that we have any position? I mean, they're obviously highly advanced, and they could call the shots if they win any time they want. But putting that aside, if we wanted to put forward our position, what do you think that position should be?
If the Anunnaki return, how should we deal with them?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They'd be vastly more powerful than we are, so we would have to do whatever they said. The thing is, it might be part of the end time scenario. It was Jesus returning not only to stop all wars and kind of save the earth, but actually stop the Anunnaki from enslaving us. I think that's part of the deal, is they are actually protecting us from them, the bad guys. The bad guys will, of course, say they're the good guys, but they're actually here to enslave rather than empower. Like any criminal or crook who says, you know, give me your bank account and I'll send you a check, and where they're actually planning on stealing all your money.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of a scheme where the Anunnaki are planning on enslaving us by using our technology. This is what the Mark of the Beast is. It's basically a chip along with much more computer systems and things of that nature, which the Anunnaki have been quietly feeding us with for the better part of a century now. And with all this technology in place, all they have to do is put in certain key components and flip a switch, and we're basically in a system where if you don't have the mark that they provide, you cannot buy and sell and live in this culture anymore.
Okay. So how do you react to this news of these disturbing deaths of so many prominent astronomers who've been working on it? I'm still doing research on it, but nonetheless, I've seen enough to be convinced that there's something very sinister seems to be going on, connecting astronomers who have been looking for near-Earth objects with the possibility of an effect on planet Earth. Are you concerned about that? What I've just mentioned to you about the astronomers? Do you think that adds up to anything, or how do you take that news?
Probably a systematic campaign of intimidation, because for Planet X researchers, and increasingly, it's actually good news, because that means that Planet X is probably out there. There'd be no other reason to cover that up.
Mm-hmm.
Or some similar kind of object, which is a clear and present danger to Earth.
How do you react to the news about this asteroid that's coming toward Earth that's 150 miles across, and that is going to come lower than the satellites toward Earth, even though NASA's trying to say that it's highly unlikely, because usually asteroids fall into the ocean, since so much of the Earth is covered by water. But nonetheless, there is always a possibility that someone could get hit, and very badly.
I actually wasn't aware of that. That's very interesting news. In part of in my book on Planet X, I talk about how the bulls and the seals of, or actually the trumpets of Revelation, are actually a description of meteors and asteroids and comets passing through Earth's atmosphere, causing great destruction. And this is really the what would happen if a Planet X was coming near. It's Planet X because it collided with Earth early in Earth's formative history. It left a lot of material floating in space, in front of it and behind it in its orbit. And as a result, you're going to have, as it comes near, lots more asteroids coming. And it's possible this new asteroid is one of the precedents of Planet X, and a sign of its return.
I know. Bless all of these unusual weather occurrences. The earthquakes, tornadoes, tsunamis, all kinds of crazy weather. The hurricane that hit New York City, I was in the dark here. I couldn't believe it for 5 days. I mean, and that's only a sample of what, might lie ahead. These are pretty rough times, I'm afraid, that we're heading toward, or in already.
Well, as Planet X approaches, and I don't think it'll actually come closer to the asteroid belt unless it interacts with one of the outer planets and its orbit is sufficiently changed so that it comes closer to Earth.
Right.
Planet X will probably only come as close as the asteroid belt. So, but the bigger issue is actually the asteroids, which will be highly destructive to hit.
You know, Zechariah Sitchin himself didn't think that the Planet X would be coming toward Earth or close to Earth. I think he could be maybe about 60 years or 50 or 60 years in the future. But from what I understand about the trajectory of Planet X, it goes it moves in a very wide elliptical orbit. And for various reasons, the speed, and it's kind of on the erratic side, so the speed is not necessarily the same. It's not necessarily uniform, and therefore there's really no way to know for sure when Planet X will be, visible in the sky, let's say, approaching as it approaches Earth. But, it would seem from all these other indications that that it's there. We know it's there pretty well, but that it's coming closer and closer.
The return of Planet X will be probably not visible until mid-tribulation, I believe, as if you believe in Book of Revelation. My theory is that it's actually described, I think it's Revelation 5, when the people look up in the sky and see something coming, and they look to hide themselves under the rocks and the mountains to hide them, what they describe as the throne of God. In ancient times, the planets were considered to be thrones of the gods, and I suspect that Planet X is something similar, where it is seen as God's kind of heavenly throne chair, which he's riding to Earth in order to judge it. And that's when things really get interesting, is when Planet X comes close. This isn't just a deal where you have a heavenly body. This is Judgment Day, when God is returning to take revenge on those he's considered to have wronged his people.
So you think they were going to be judged, right?
I'm sorry?
You think they were going to be all judged?
Yeah, I think that has to do with the end times. Has to do with Jesus returning. So part of the book goes into that. It's actually the title of the book is about how it is basically the sign of the second coming of Christ. It's called the sign of the Son of Man and the end of the age, meaning its next appearance will indicate the return of Christ.
If you were judging the human race, how would you judge us as a whole?
I don't think mankind deserves to be destroyed, but I think what happens in the end times is there's a lot of what you would call maybe wars of extermination against various peoples and religions and things like that, including Christianity, which would justify God attacking Earth. Right now, I don't think there's enough reason, personally. There has to be a really good justification for such an action. And I think, as described in the book of Revelation, with the destruction of Christianity, that would justify God attacking, because God's people would be largely exterminated. Really doesn't have much choice anymore.
Would you describe yourself as particularly as a religious person? I mean, you studied religion, but are you very religious yourself?
I would say I was a spiritual person, religion in the sense that I adhere to Christianity. I'm not a churchianity kind of guy. I'm more of a open-minded explorer of truth, I guess you could say. I try to find the truth.
Yeah, very few people And the reason I ask is because obviously, me seen as having, reflecting your religious beliefs, becoming your, a broader belief system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's my belief system is based on Christianity. I've been influenced by other things, but Christianity is the core concept of philosophy. And I don't see why not. I mean, the Bible is a tremendous resource, and it has an enormous amount of information related to the end times and apocalyptic. And I also believe, based on my book, a great deal to do with Planet X, actually. And I think it's one of the core concepts and hidden secrets of the Bible. In fact, the revelation of the end times may actually have to do with the revelation of the existence of Planet X and its importance to human history. And thus, my emphasis on that is kind of the core of the book of Revelation. And I believe actually Revelation 4 might actually be a description of the appearance of Planet X, because it sounds very much similar to the creation, the appearance of Marduk and Anu Malish with all the winds surrounding him and the armor and the throne and all the rest. After I'd done some research on that.
Have you spoken to a lot of people about this? I mean, just average folks, to what degree are people, your friends or people you know, are they aware of Planet X? Do they, take it seriously?
Most people don't take it terribly seriously. They do not be interested in it. Usually you have people who are interested in apocalyptic or are interested in Planet X type subjects. Those are the two people that tend to be interested in that sort of thing. A surprising amount of Christians actually thought of Planet X as a possible end-time factor, which I found surprising. I've had interaction with people over email saying, I thought of that too, as Planet X has always been kind of a possibility for the end times. Maybe this is the sign of the Son of Man. No one had ever really approached it in the kind of systematic and thorough way I had. And so I've kind of become the banner standard bearer for the concept because no one else has kind of dared to do it.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, Doug, where do you live? Where are you located?
I live in the Chicago area.
Really?
Chicago area.
Oh, Chicago. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I think that pretty much wraps this up. Unless you have anything you want to say that we haven't said so far.
No, it sounds good. I appreciate you having me on. It's a very interesting discussion.
Well, I thank you very much. I appreciate you being on the show, Doug, and maybe we'll have you back again sometime when we touch on this. We're always talking about Planet X, so when we touch on this sort of angle, religious, spiritual angle in connection with Planet X and the Bible and the end times and all of these things are things that we always talk about sooner or later. So thanks very much, and I appreciate you being on the show.
All right, thanks very much for having me.
Okay, thanks. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, in the remaining minutes of the show, we have maybe close to 10 minutes left, I want to talk to you about some of the things that we have touched on before, but I just wanted to go into a little bit more detail. We talked about this comet coming the beginning of the show, about this comet coming toward Earth on February 15th and February 16th. Asteroid. It's called asteroid DA14. That's the number they've assigned to it. DA14. It's supposed to be 197 feet across and capable of, if it ever hit Earth, of damage that could extend perhaps at least 800 or 830 square miles across. There was an event that happened involving an asteroid 1908 known as the Tunguska asteroid that hit this forest in Siberia. Fortunately, there was only a forest in Siberia, but all of the trees were leveled. And so this could just be massive devastation, wherever it fell. Hopefully, it'll fall into the ocean. But it is actually located, that is expected to come below our satellites. So that'll tell you how close it is or will be to Earth, and that's in a very short period from now. So, you know, let's stay on the alert for that, and there are other asteroids and comets also coming toward us, which, as I mentioned earlier, and as Doug mentioned too, is something that occurs in conjunction with Planet X, the arrival of Planet X or the approach of Planet X toward Earth. We mentioned earlier about the case of these astronomers, maybe two dozen astronomers who died mysterious deaths, and these astronomers all had one thing in common, in that they worked on projects involving near-Earth objects, which means comets or asteroids like the one that's coming at us now, or perhaps Planet X itself. We really don't know. I want to end the show by talking a little bit more about the third secret of Fatima. This is the Vatican's most carefully guarded secret, and it has to do with a comet or an asteroid or a bolide. Or Planet X, take your pick, but it has to do with something like that, a large body from space coming toward Earth and causing, in a worst-case scenario, or even in a likely-case scenario, damage of a flooding of biblical proportions, the only way to put it out there. Now, don't take my word for this. This comes from two individuals. This comes from no less a source than Pope John Paul II, and it comes from a guy by the name of Father Malachy Martin, who was a demonologist for the Catholic Church, but was very friendly with John Paul II, and he also knew a couple of the other popes very well, including, I believe, the current Pope Benedict. This is what we're dealing with the third secret of Fatima. They've kept that bottled up, and from the public, from both Catholics and non-Catholics, all of this time. And the first secret has to do with just to recap a little, the first secret has to do with World War I. The second secret had to do with World War II. And the third secret has to do with a bolide, or to use Vladimir Malachy Martin's terminology, or a comet, or an asteroid, or Planet X. It hardly matters when it really comes down to it. It's a large body from space coming toward Earth. The handwriting's on the wall. It would obliterate most of the population of the planet. Some would survive, undoubtedly. But that's what could be at stake. We're not talking about that, by the way, with this asteroid that's approaching, because that's not big enough to do that kind of damage. But it could be, inflict serious damage, really serious damage, that could affect, in a way, could affect, I suppose, large parts of the planet. But it's not going to level for large parts of the planet. It's not going to cause ocean flooding to that degree, because it just isn't large enough. But it's something to keep an eye out open. Speaking of keeping an eye out open, I guess we have just about 5 more minutes left of the show. Hillary Clinton is been in the news because of this having this concussion and then some complications from the concussion. She came out of the hospital. The reason I'm mentioning Hillary Clinton is that she and her husband Bill played a really important role in keeping the UFO secrets under wraps. Let me explain that. There's a man named Lawrence Rockefeller, the oldest of the Rockefeller brothers. And Lawrence Rockefeller had what he called a UFO initiative with the White House. He was trying to get the Clintons, or specifically Bill Clinton, at that time president, to reveal the truth about Roswell, and he had it lined up all kinds of former military intelligence people and others who had worked at the Pentagon, mostly in the 60s and 70s, who were prepared to go public on what they knew about the Roswell case in 1947 in New Mexico, as well as their own personal experiences. And they the Rockefeller Initiative didn't go anywhere, to put it in a nutshell. And the reason the Rockefeller Initiative didn't go anywhere was because Bill and Hillary decided that even though Rockefeller was hosting them on his ranch in Jacksonville, Wyoming, for about a week on vacation, when they were on vacation there, and even though he was making a sizable donation to Bill Clinton's re-election campaign for president, and even though Rockefeller had a captive audience, so to speak, Hillary asked Rockefeller one morning, please do not bring this subject up again. And Bill Clinton said that he was concerned about getting entangled in something that would just get him more and more and more entangled in it, and he didn't want to put himself in that kind of division. So it was political, for political reasons. Now, those documents that Rockefeller gave the Clintons in a book called UFOs, the Best Available Evidence, included formerly secret documents. And they're readily available now, these documents. And what they show, in some instances, there's some documents that pertain to national security issues and visitations of UFOs in nuclear weapons storage areas, as well as UFOs that were seen by encountered by pilots of private of commercial aircraft, you know, potentially putting airline passengers at risk, and yet they chose to pass on this, and Rockefeller, just let that go as water under the bridge, I guess. But Rockefeller had all kinds of people lined up, and I tell you, I have copies of videotaped depositions. This is astounding. Of 400 former military people, some of the ones that Rockefeller had lined up and others, 400 former military people and intelligence people who are all saying basically the same thing. In many cases, they know about the Roswell incident. What they don't know about the Roswell incident, they've had their own personal encounters with UFOs. They're aware of the UFO cover-up, as they say, is international. So, at this point, I mean, UFOs are getting closer and closer and closer. It seems that as things, whether it's the Anunnaki from Planet X or whether it's stereotypical gray beings or whatever's out there, they're out there, and NASA is definitely doing its best to keep, actually it's doing a pretty fairly good job of keeping a lid on it. What all you have to do is to go to YouTube, and there's a lot of nonsense on YouTube, a lot of hoax videos, and it's becoming very difficult to tell the difference between some of the hoaxes and the real footage. Nonetheless, though, you definitely get a sense of UFOs coming closer and much more frequently this year than ever before. So it really is incumbent upon the governments of the world to reveal the truth about UFOs. Great Britain is the same way. In fact, Prince Philip and even Queen Elizabeth have been very active in UFO research, particularly Prince Philip, and it's been going on with him since the 1950s. And it totally contradicts the government's the British government's military's official position on it. He privately has interviewed witnesses of UFO incidents in the they had a map in his office, I understand, one time they had things in the map indicating UFO sightings in different parts of his country and different parts of the world. So he's like really into it. And they're also, by the way, very much into crop circles, since apparently a crop circle was left on one of the queen's estates, and she was very, very intrigued with crop circles and still is. I guess that pretty much wraps this up. So I want to tell you that next week's show, I expect to have Nancy Leader. Nancy Leader is the woman who is single-handedly responsible. Some say that she's irresponsible, but and she may, the jury is out, but I must tell you, Nancy Leader is a UFO, or considers herself a UFO contactee, and she's the person who single-handedly popularized Planet X on the Internet. And consequently, according to Space.com, there's something in this incredible number, hard to believe, but nonetheless, Space.com is legit, and they claim that there are as many as 2 million websites out there devoted to Planet X. Well, here we are, Radio Doomsday Live is your Planet X headquarters. Until next week with Nancy Leader, Mike Luckman signing off.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes.